You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
The next one could be far worse than this. I mean, coronavirus is terrible. COVID has been terrible. It has killed people. But you've seen what it's done to our society and our country and the world. The next one could be much deadlier, much more disruptive. People forget all this research that China does is still going on right now. They're doing, as we speak, they're doing it today. It didn't stop. This continues.
June the 22nd, 2021. Those are the words of Senator Marco Rubio. A scary possibility. A realistic possibility. He's talking about what still could be under development in the Wuhan lab as we speak. We know it's still operating. We just don't know what they're doing because they will not allow us in. He introduced a bill. Senator Rubio, serving on the Senate Intel Committee, introduced a bill that he thinks I'm going to get bipartisan support for it, and that says 90 days after the bill is passed, China must provide full, clear, transparent investigation of the origins of COVID and what's going on in the lab, or we start taking numerous steps to financially punish China. Obviously, it would include cutting off funding for any research at Wuhan, which what I think we should do anyway. I wouldn't even wait 90 days, but we'll take other financial moves. And, of course, the Biden administration, they said, well, we might try to get the rest of the global community to isolate China. I've got a guest coming up a little bit later. We're going to get into that aspect as well. Jim Garrity, National Review contributor, and how others are helping protect China. That includes Peter Daszak, who was on the COVID-19 commission, but did not disclose his previous relationship with China while he's still supposedly investigating them. Yeah, we want some full accounting. And, of course, we fear and believe and know for a fact that many of the other nations, they're too invested in China. They're not going to isolate China. By the way, in one U.S. state, 4,000 fully vaccinated citizens testing positive for COVID. Positive, even after being vaccinated. We are hearing reports that kids are having trouble with the second shot. And, of course, yesterday, the SCOTUS Supreme Court ruled that the NCAA has to compensate college players. They make a lot of money off those kids while they're going through their school. They build dorms off that money. They build big auditoriums. They enlarge their basic campus. And the kids get a chance to play and maybe a scholarship. Supreme Court says, no, they have to be compensated in some way or another. Dr. Rick Layman, U.S. Center for Sports Medicine, is going to join us on that very topic, and also other issues, the vaccination issue and kids having trouble, and the Olympics going to feature more transgenders this time around. So we'll be getting into that with Dr. Layman. And then a 9-year-old girl calls out her school board.
I was told 2 weeks ago at this very meeting spot, no politics in school. I believed what you said at this meeting. So at lunch, I went up to my principal to tell him about the BLM poster and that I wanted it down. He said it's not coming down. I was like, yeah, it is, because the school board said on May 25th, no BLM or politics in school. He said, that's weird. They were the ones who made them. I was stunned. When I was here 2 weeks ago, you told us to report any BLM in our schools. Apparently, you know they're in our schools because you made the signs.
That's her statement. And she had more to say. Some are questioning, could a 9-year-old really compose some of that? Some are saying she couldn't do it because she's 9. Well, I know kids 9, 10. I don't know any 6 or 7-year-olds that could do it, but I know that some could. Whether or not she read it to her parents and kind of restructured it, I don't know. Oh, some think, yeah, she did. You won't give her the benefit. Why? Because she's speaking against BLM, or she's speaking against a board telling her that we're not going to have politics in school, and it's still posted. Well, you can make your own decision, but we're going to hear from her, and then you decide. Oh, is it a difference because it's a white child? No, it shouldn't be. If it's a 9-year-old, it's a 9-year-old, because I didn't tell you color. Is it a white child? Do you know? Does it make a difference? We'll get into all of that. Oh, the Dems now claiming we were never against voter ID. No, no, no. Even Georgia gubernatorial candidate one time, Stacey Abrams, we were never against voter ID. What? We've got proof to show you were, Stacey. We've got a lot to cover the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
For years, I've told you, be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. That's because I know the excellent work Wellington does when it comes to making your home, your business, even hospitals safe. See, recently I asked Wellington to check a relative's home. The relative had been constantly sick. Doctors couldn't find a cause. I asked Tom Wellington, please check the house. After extensive testing, Wellington could rule out mold and other air and water toxins. Well, that was a major relief, and the negative results gave doctors added information. So when I encourage you to call Wellington, I mean it. Wellington, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the Better Business Bureau, Missouri and Illinois. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. I want you to know something special. John Beal Roofing constantly gives back to the community in so many ways, supporting more charities and good causes than any other local roofing company. Why? It's the right thing to do. Keep that in mind when you need a new roof, plus quality work at the lowest price, guaranteed. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I've been holding it so long, I've been sleeping all alone, Lord, I miss you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
When Georgia passed targeted updates to its election laws based on lessons learned during the pandemic era elections, Democrats trashed the bill as, quote, a redux of Jim Crow. They misrepresented its content so wildly that even left-leaning fact checks repeatedly debunked these claims. But by then, the train of disinformation had left the station. Pretty soon, any state that dared to deviate from unique pandemic-era procedures faced summary judgment in the court of liberal outrage. It doesn't seem to matter that the facts tell a different story.
Those are the words of Senator Mitch McConnell speaking about this federal reform, election reform bill that would basically give federal control over all elections going forward. And of course, it had to depend upon, one, getting the filibuster out of the way. And Senator Manchin had indicated, Democrat, not going to do that. Senator Manchin of West Virginia. So Senate Democrats, even CNN, even their own copy now reads, Senate Democrats are on track to suffer a stinging defeat, with Republican opposition expected to sink a voting and election bill that Democrats have made a signature priority. The CNN article continues, that outcome will underscore the limits of the party's power with the narrowest possible Senate majority. So they set up a key test of the vote as a necessary counter to state-level efforts to restrict voting access. Republicans have united against it. They're crying out that it is a partisan power grab. That's the wording of CNN. And, yeah, that's exactly what Republicans are saying. And they're also saying, as pointed out in the CNN article, this is a federal overreach into state voting and election systems. A failure of the bill to move forward will force the Democrats to confront the question of what else can they do? What else can they do to move forward and press the issue and trigger a fresh outpouring of calls from progressives to eliminate the legislative filibuster? Now, again, that requires most bills to get the votes of at least 10 Republicans, given this current Senate makeup. Votes are not there to eliminate the filibuster with Manchin and other moderate Democrats opposed. And in fact, they've even had support from former President Barack Obama. He has had what he considered a self-made policy not to weigh in on day-to-day scrum in D.C. But he says, we do need to do this. He said, we can't wait until the next election, because if we have the same kinds of shenanigans that brought about January 6th, stop it right there. Just stop it. The voting had nothing to do with January 6th directly. Now, if you want to say because the vote didn't go the way many of those who stormed the Capitol didn't like, then you could tie it to it. But it's of all the folks who voted the other way, how many showed up January 6th? I didn't. Did you? How many others? But anyway, he goes on to say, we can't wait until the next election, because if we have the same kinds of shenanigans that brought about January 6th, if we have that for a couple more election cycles, we're going to have real problems in terms of our democracy long term. He said so in a phone call with grassroots supporters and former Attorney General Eric Holder, according to The Hill, the publication The Hill. Obama said, I felt the need to speak out about it. It's known, of course, as For the People Act, even though he did have a policy not to weigh in on such political matters. He said, since I left office, I've tried to make a policy not to weigh in on day-to-day scrum in Washington, but what's happening this week is more than just a partisan bill coming up or not coming up to a vote. By the way, Eric Holder is not chairman of the National Democrat Redistricting Committee. He still thinks there might be a chance forward. But even CNN is saying not very likely at this point, just not going to happen. Now, part of the changes that are going on that Democrats are very concerned about, having to do with the last election and elections going forward, were the vast number of absentee ballots. There were more than anecdotal stories of absentee ballots going to folks who didn't reside at that particular address anymore. I don't mean just applications, I mean actual ballots. In some cases, more than one went to a particular address. Now, were they used falsely, illegally? And, of course, we've had this Senate audit of the Maricopa County election results that began back on April 23rd. It is beginning to wind down. They expect to have it finalized by June 26. They say the final report of this audit taking place in Arizona's largest county not really expected to be made public until August. Legislators from 20 other, I should say, key battleground states, other 2020 battleground states, Georgia, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, all expressing interest in having similar audits in their states. Unclear if that's going to happen. I do want to point out to you that established media outlets, that would be state-controlled media, as well as Democrat politicians around the country, have continued nonstop attacks on the audit, which began when the notion of such an audit first started. In fact, in a speech delivered this month, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland said the Department of Justice would scrutinize post-election audits to ensure they abide by federal statutory requirements to protect the election records and avoid the intimidation of voters. NBC News said that's a clear reference to a Republican-backed audit in Arizona. Well, the Arizona Attorney General punched back and stated, and by the way, he is a Republican running for the U.S. Senate. I want to make sure you understand all the players. He said, I sent a letter to Merrick Garland accusing Garland, the nation's top law enforcement officer, of showing, quote, an alarming disdain for state sovereignty. Now, reference Maricopa County. About two-thirds of those 3 million votes cast in the 2020 November election in Arizona, two-thirds of those in Arizona were in Maricopa County. Joe Biden was certified the winner of the state's 11 Electoral College votes by a margin of less than 11,000. His margin in Maricopa County, 45,000. If that's what he won by, then that's fine. An audit should prove it and back it up. Should be no issue. And I want legitimate elections. Yes, I want maybe a particular candidate to win, but let's begin by having legitimate, fair elections. That's what everyone should want. But Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said this bill that they're trying to push through, as they call it, For the People Act, he said, first of all, they clearly know it was never going to clear the Senate's high bar for advancing legislation. They knew they were not going to get rid of the filibuster. But they continue to push it anyway because it's a power play. It's also a publicity play. Now, in the midst of this, with this basically at this point going down, there's another piece of information that's been breaking. It happened yesterday in the Washington Post. The Washington Post began a report yesterday about it, the apparent, quote, evolution that prominent Democrats have made when it comes to voter ID laws. That's right. They're suggesting in the Washington Post that there are Democrats who have always been for voter ID. Always been. Well, the Republican National Committee had pointed out over the weekend, no, they've been often linking voter ID requirements to Jim Crow laws. Every time they speak up, they call it part of Jim Crow laws. Republicans, of course, pushing voter ID hard at local level, state level in recent years. But now some of the Democrats, according to the Washington Post, are evolving. Or, in the words of some, they never were against it, voter ID. I have a hard time buying that part of the story. But let's go to Senator Mitch McConnell. And he said, we are now beginning to see Democrats for something that 80% of the Americans believe in.
Prominent Democrats have railed against voter ID requirements for years. But now that voter ID is among the sticking points, keeping the Democratic caucus from uniting behind S1, some Democrats have started indicating, well, they've had a change of heart. Now, I would commend them for coming around to common sense positions on that issue that 80% of Americans already support.
That's pretty big, isn't it? Well, Stacey Abrams, of course, who is a gubernatorial candidate in Georgia, and one of those speaking out about the Georgia re-election law or the election law being changed, fearing again that it was going to bring, in her opinion, it was going to bring Jim Crow laws back. And remember, to the extent that she was basically telling the MLB, no sense trying to hold your Major League Baseball All-Star game here in Georgia, as you were going to do here in Atlanta, because you're not going to have a lot of the black players show up and you're not going to get any support. And so MLB decided to move on to Denver, which really upset a lot of folks in Georgia, especially minority businesses and minority citizens who were planning on, you know, they're going to make some good money during the All-Star game in Georgia. And then when MLB decided, okay, if it's going to be that bad, your new laws in that state are going to deny a true Democrat vote, and it's going back to Jim Crow-type laws, as you want to describe it, then, yeah, we won't be there. But now even Stacey Abrams, the one who put that stake in the ground and said, this is why you need to leave Georgia and not come here, and then later kind of regret it, say, well, don't really pull out, because she knew it was going to blow up in her face. Now she's pointing out, in her opinion, that yes, it wouldn't be bad. Would not be bad to actually have voter ID. Now, I want you to hear a beginning. There's a clip that's been put together. Let me see if I can pull the source up real quick on this thing. I think it was put together. It was put together by Fox News. So I want to make sure, again, you know the source. But it's two clips of Stacey Abrams. Actually, it's put together by the GOP, not Fox News source just ran it. The first thing you're going to hear from Stacey is June 17. What is today? June 22nd, 5 days ago, when she says no one has ever objected to voter ID. You're going to hear behind that her remarks of April 27, 2021, same year now, April 27, where she says, yes, voter ID is a bad idea. Just listen.
That's one of the fallacies of Republican talking points that have been deeply disturbing. No one has ever objected to having to prove who you are to vote. It's been part of our nation's history since the inception of voting.
Voters without a driver's license or state ID must surrender their personal information and risk identity theft just to receive an absentee ballot. And then there are the 200,000 Georgia voters who don't have either ID and the putative free ID that is not free when you factor in the cost of transportation and the cost of underlying document. You can read the full list of objections to SB 202 at stopjimcrow2.com.
All right. Now you heard that. I want to play it one more time so you hear her clearly say, no one's ever objected to it. And then she starts listing in April why it should be off there.
That's one of the fallacies of Republican talking points that have been deeply disturbing. No one has ever objected to having to prove who you are to vote. It's been part of our nation's history since the inception of voting.
Voters without a driver's license or state ID must surrender their personal information and risk identity theft just to receive an absentee ballot. And then there are the 200,000 Georgia voters who don't have either ID and the putative free ID that is not free when you factor in the cost of transportation and the cost of underlying document. You can read the full list of objections.
There you go. There you go. She said it all again. Now, the Republicans may have a new candidate. Stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
This one person said, but my God, you should have seen the response for Ron DeSantis. He was like a conquering king. And this person who's been in Republican politics for 40, 45 years said, I haven't seen anything since Reagan in 80. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable.
Ron DeSantis.
Mm-hmm. Ron DeSantis. And I keep hearing this.
I have too.
Just Rockstar says this guy is taking over the Republican Party.
And Ron DeSantis.
Ron DeSantis.
Boy, they're excited about Ron DeSantis. That is MSNBC host, Morning Joe host, Joe Scarborough, and the rest of his team. They're reacting to that everybody seems to be excited about Ron DeSantis. According to someone he quoted, he said someone who's been a Republican in Republican politics for 40, 45 years, the guy he quotes is saying, I haven't seen anything since Reagan in 80 like this. DeSantis is unbelievable. And in part, they were referring to former Vice President Mike Pence reception at the Faith and Freedom Coalition Summit, and that Pence was received respectful. He got three standing ovations, but kind of muted. And then they start talking about Ron DeSantis. He's taken over the Republican Party. What do you think? Well, I've told you yesterday about a straw poll. Now, this was taken at the Western Conservative Summit in Denver, the very one that where Pence spoke. Let me make sure that is exactly the same thing. I'm not sure that is the same one. It might be. Anyway, they were asking participants select each potential candidate they would approve for president in 2024. Top five. DeSantis, 74%. Trump, number two, about 71.4%. Cruz, Senator Cruz, 42.8%. Pompeo, 39%. Senator Tim Scott, 35.5%. So based on that poll, if it's true, yeah, DeSantis is looking stronger. Now, this comes as DeSantis is deploying state and local law enforcement officers to the U.S.-Mexico border to help Texas deal with the ongoing illegal immigration, Texas and Arizona. So the poll also asked those being questioned, rank your top issues. Here are the top three. Now, again, This is a straw poll taken at the Western Conservative Summit in Denver. Number one issue by 82%, immigration, border security. Number two, 79%, election integrity. Number three, religious freedom, 75%. So if you believe this straw poll, and of course we're a long ways from any presidential election. We do have the midterms coming up, but we're a long ways from the presidential election. DeSantis hasn't said he's really going to run as president. Many have already said put him with Trump, and Trump definitely gets in, and then DeSantis would be the perfect guy to take over. That if Trump does run again, it's very unlikely he's going to bring in Pence. Not just because he didn't think Pence gave him enough support January 6th, but that he felt that Pence has just not been strong enough in some other areas. Nice, likable guy, but maybe doesn't have the fire in his eyes and the fire in the belly to go in and wage war, as Trump is always willing to do. DeSantis pretty much outspoken overall. Now, against that, there's another survey I don't want to share with you. This is by Wallet Hub. Now, Wallet Hub basically is a financial website. Credit scores, reports, credit improvement. So you need, again, to understand the source. What Wallet Hub really knows about anything like this, I don't know. But it's interesting to see what they found. They looked at 13 what they call key indicators of patriotism, which included the military enlistees in a state and the veterans to the share of adults who voted in the 2020 presidential election. In the study, each state could receive 100 points for a perfect score. The financial site allowed 29 points for military engagement category. They include military enlistees and veterans as subcategories, 75 points for civic engagement, voter turnout, community volunteerism, jury participation, civic education requirements. So against this methodology, thank you very much, Larry. Appreciate it. Try it again when you're a professional. Wallet Hub concluded Montana was the most patriotic state in the union. Score of almost 62%. Montana. Top 10. Well, let's look at the lowest. New York, considered the least patriotic. Coming up, Jim Garrity, contributor to the National Review. That's a leading conservative magazine website, and what we know or don't know about COVID.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
When it comes to insects in the world, we are outnumbered. A University of Nebraska researcher estimates that there are 10 quintillion insects. That's a 10 with 18 zeros behind it. Now you know you need Rodler, Rodler Pest Solutions. Here's another fact. When one insect gets in your home, more will come and spread and multiply your kitchen, your bathroom, your bedroom. Call Rodler Pest Solutions immediately. Rodler, family owned and operated for three generations. If you've never used Rodler, I encourage you to start now. If you haven't used Rodler recently, do it now. This is the season when the invasion starts. And remember, we're outnumbered. Get help. Call Rodler, 877-ROTTLER, 877-ROTTLER. Or check the website, rodtler.com, 877-ROTTLER, Rodler Pest Solutions.
Well, I started out with $1 gambled with a man and I won me another. Bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. I'm gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome, my guest, Jim Garrity, contributor to National Review. That is a leading conservative magazine and website. Jim, welcome aboard, sir. Hello, Jim. Can you hear me? Jim, we heard you briefly. We are having phone trouble again today for some reason. The gremlins are back. We hear him, but let's try to hang up and call him again if we can try that. I don't know. Quentin's in there saying, what the? And I don't blame him. I mean, we continue to have problems on that line. By the way, Jim Garrity had written a piece that I want to discuss with him to begin with, and the fact that Peter Daszak, the president of the EcoHealth Alliance, is considered a COVID-19 expert, at least for the Chinese state-run media. But he did an interview with the state-run Global Times, China media, earlier this year, and even highlighted, or echoed, I should say, the claim of the Chinese government that COVID did not originate in Wuhan, that it might be out of Thailand, it might be out of Cambodia, Japan. Remember, they even said the U.S. of A. All right, we're trying to rearrange your mind. I'll send him a quick email.
I hear a voice.
There we go. Oh, we got you now. Good. Thought we lost you for a moment. Glad to have you with us, Jim. I don't know what happened.
Larry, it's good to be with you. You know, for a moment ago, the only voices I was hearing were the ones on my head.
Well, I hope they were good.
they were fine. But anyway, thank you very much for having me on your program.
You bet. So we were setting up the fact that you had pointed out that Peter Daszak, first of all, I hear one report that he removed himself from the COVID-19 commission, and I hear others that he's been dropped because of he was not forthcoming about his alliances with China. Go ahead.
Sure. So he's the president of this organization called the EcoHealth Alliance, and it's been active in virus research for many years, and was not considered a particularly controversial institution for quite some time, although they were always big fans of what's called gain-of-function research, which is where you say, look, if we want to understand how really dangerous and virulent and contagious viruses work, we have to take these viruses that aren't that dangerous and do experiments and alter them and kind of accelerate their evolution so that they become more dangerous and virulent.
And weaponize them.
Yeah, you know, there are a whole bunch of people who have looked at that and said, you know, that seems like a formula for an accident. You're literally taking something that's not that dangerous and deliberately trying to make it more dangerous.
Right.
And the argument has been, well, if we want to stop future bad viruses, we need to do this sort of thing. So virologists have been debating about this for a really long time. But back in the tail end of the Obama administration, the National Institute of Health said, you know, we're really, really worried about this. We want to make sure everybody's using the kind of appropriate guidelines. Everybody should stop doing this until we give you new guidelines. But they were allowed to kind of grandfather in one existing program. It was done in partnership with the University of North Carolina and the Wuhan Institute of Virology out in Wuhan. And there's a lot of people who look at this and say, aha, this was how scientists who wanted to keep this kind of research going. Well, if you couldn't do it in the United States, you just do it over there in China. The Chinese government was perfectly fine with this. And, oh, by the way, they had just built a biosafety level 4 lab, which is the most dangerous kind or most secure.
Sure.
The kind of lab designed to work with the most contagious and dangerous viruses. They built it right in the middle of a major city, which
made no sense. Yeah, right there.
Yeah. Might not be the ideal spot in retrospect, you know, put in the middle of a major international trade and transportation hub. And so if it ever did get out, it would spread very quickly. Yeah, that was a bad decision. But anyway, Daszak has been working closely with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. He was among those who signed this letter in the medical journal called The Lancet very early on, in which he basically poo-pooed the whole idea. And he said the lab leak theory is a conspiracy theory, and it's stirring up anti-Asian hatred, and there's no basis for this, in fact, or anything.
But while he's doing that, what is he keeping from us and them?
He was not disclosing the fact that his organization, EcoHealth Alliance, was one of the ones that had taken taxpayer money from the U.S. National Institutes of Health for virus research and spending some of it on and giving it in terms of grants to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And he is very active with the doctor over there has been nicknamed Batwoman, who goes into the caves and the abandoned mines and collects all these samples and brings them back to Wuhan. And so on the one hand, you could say, okay, this is a guy who, you know, knows this institution best, but also who fairly clearly has a conflict of interest. He's literally saying, we can trust these people. These are my, you know, without saying, these are my former business partners.
Now, to that extent, I want to add, you point out in your article, folks, again, you're listening to Jim Garrity, a contributor, National Review. You point out that Daszak is the only American citizen the Chinese would allow to visit Wuhan as part of the World Health Investigative Team. I didn't think anybody was allowed to go inside, but you say he was. Other Americans were on the team, but they were not allowed inside. He was.
Yeah, Larry, we should point out, this is the one that happened like January or February of this year, 2021, meaning this was not quickly.
Right.
Remember, this was first cases were outbreaking in towards the middle to end of December in 2019. It was a long time of the World Health Organization negotiating with the Chinese government. When can we go? How many people can go? Where are we allowed to go? You'd like to think that considering the stakes of figuring out where COVID-19 came from, that the Chinese government would say, do whatever you got to do, go wherever you want to go, we're an open book. But of course, they're, you know, they're a communist authoritarian government. They have all kinds of secrets. And there are more than a few people who have good reason to suspect that the Wuhan Institute of Virology, the research they were doing in viruses, may have military application.
Well, what gets me, he's quoted in one of the pieces that he said, in fact, I know it was an interview they did with 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl. He said, it wasn't our task to find out if China had covered up the origin issue, and yet he's the only one who was allowed in, and basically all he was doing was parroting. I have to ask, do you think he really even saw anything? And of course, who knows what was cleaned up before he got there, if you're going to even give him the allowance that maybe he tried to do something truthful.
So other members, so there was an international team, I think there was like 17 different researchers and scientists who were allowed in. As mentioned, Daszak was the only American who was allowed in. They did get a short tour of the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and they described it as a guided tour. During that visit to Wuhan, they asked for very, like,
did they get cookies and milk? I mean, come on.
They asked for the raw data on the first cases of the first patients, and the Chinese refused to turn them over. And, Larry, you know, these are scientists, right? These are not guys who are hepped up. They're not full on rage steroids. Or they're usually pretty buttoned down, milquetoast kind of guys. And apparently the exchanges with the Chinese scientists got very heated and very, you know, there was a great deal of frustration among some members of the WHO team saying, look, we know, wait a minute, we came here to investigate. Why are you not giving us this data? And the Chinese said, well, we haven't had enough time to prepare the data. Now, keep in mind, this is more than a year after.
Now, the other thing is Daszak is, I mean, he obviously had a conflict. He goes inside, and he's also parroting their story. This could have come out of Cambodia. You know, remember, China even said the U.S. Now, you did another piece the other day, again, for National Review, where you point out how dare, you talk about the audacity. They are saying that the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Batwoman and some others in there, should get almost a Nobel Prize for their work on this kind of stuff after basically nearly wiping out populations across the world.
Yeah, we should point out, at least if from where I sit, it's not proven that this is a lab leak, but certainly the circumstantial evidence seems to be piling up higher and higher. Yeah, this is from the Chinese Ministry of Science. They had nominated the Wuhan Institute of Virology for one of their allegedly prestigious awards, but in the statement from the Chinese Foreign Ministry said, yes, the Wuhan Institute of Virology should receive the Nobel Prize in Medicine. And I got it, you know, like, this sounds crazy, Larry, but let's give them credit. If it wasn't for the Wuhan Institute of Virology, would Pfizer have invented its vaccine? No.
Yeah, okay.
Would Moderna and Oxford and all these other vaccines? Yeah.
Would all these people have died? Would all these people have died?
How many scientific discoveries have touched all of our lives?
Well, that's true. That's true. And if they're looking for something that's touched all of our lives, they did it. You know, I had a story the other day, and I don't know. I'm not trying to ambush you, catch you off guard. I don't know if you've probably seen some of this story that the rumors that a vice minister of state security defected back in mid-Feb, flew from Hong Kong to the U.S. with his daughter, that he was a longtime China Ministry of State Security, and that he might have known about a lot of the ministry counterintel in China and might have even more information about the Wuhan lab. Has he surfaced on your screen yet as to having any value, or are those just rumors going around?
I was going to say, Larry, I wish I had more to know, or I wish I knew more or could tell you more. No one that I've spoken to has any real information on this one way or the other. I think it's safe to say that if the U.S. intelligence community had this guy, they'd be holding that very close to the vest, probably in some safe house somewhere, and will not be popping up anytime soon. Clearly, the Chinese would know if he had disappeared or not. And the fact that he has not appeared in any, you know, public appearances in China would certainly be an indication that maybe he's not within that country anymore, and maybe he has gotten over to us.
Within the
I would tell people, be a little wary about all those rumors just until you hear something more.
I agree with you on that. In the last minute here, Senator Rubio introducing a bill that he thinks he'll get bipartisan support that basically say after the bill's passed within 90 days, China must be fully transparent or we'll start initiating acts against him. But the more important thing he said is that, of course, Wuhan is still operating. Mike Pompeo said the same thing the other day. And there are a lot of things they're working on that could be worse than COVID.
Yeah, you know, what I was starting to allude earlier is that almost all the research they're doing is what you call dual use, meaning that the more you know about how viruses spread and what makes them virulent, well, you can use that to stop viruses, or you can use that to make or enhance viruses. And, you know, China has signed the Biological Weapons Treaty, but there have been a whole bunch of suspicions that they have not actually been honoring it and that they've been secretly developing these in secret. I don't subscribe to the theory that COVID-19 was a biological weapon. It did hit China first and did kill plenty of their citizens. It's just too contagious to work for that. But that doesn't mean the reason they weren't connected in
what
some
way. Sure, what they were doing. Yeah. Jim Garrity, we're out of time. I want to thank you. We'll do it again. Jim Garrity, contributor to National Review. Stand by for more about the Hunter artwork.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I told you the other day about how Walter Schaub, who served as the Office of Government Ethics Director under former President Obama, said that Hunter Biden's latest art venture has, quote, a shameful, gritty, I should say grifty, feeling to it. Grifty, as if you were trying to con people. And he believes that President Biden should, at a minimum, ask Hunter Biden, do not go through with his auction because it's raising suspicions of potential pay-for-play corruption. In fact, Schaub, in an interview with Fox News, said, the notion of a president's son capitalizing on that relationship by selling art at obviously inflated prices, keeping the public in the dark about who's funneling money to him, has a shameful and grifty feel to it. Just as hotel charges and real estate purchases created a risk of unknown parties funneling money to the Trump family for potentially unsavory purposes. So he wanted to roll it all in with Trump. Okay, that's all right. I want to read that part of it for you as well. But he said the concern here is that the buyers are going to be anonymous. And the Soho art dealer, who also, by the way, apparently has some ties to China, is holding this private viewing for Hunter Biden's artwork in L.A., followed by an exhibition in New York later this year. And he's admitting anyone who buys it would be guaranteed instant profit. He's the president's son. Everybody would want a piece of that. So he's making it very clear. Folks are going to be buying because it's Hunter Biden's name on it. And the questions come up immediately that, is this a way for some to money launder? You know, it's a money laundering operation. Get some money to Hunter, and Hunter kind of helps carry out some things that they want. And they can say, no, we bought the art. We were paying for the art. We didn't give him money. We bought the art. And the proof will be that the art dealer is going to take a cut of it. So, see, it's all a full, clear, transparent, legal operation. You think? Well, if Walter Schaub, the former Office of Government Ethics Director under Obama, says it has a shameful, grifty feeling to it, you have to say, maybe we need to take a closer look at this. Now, you remember the other day I told you that the Biden administration has announced plans, according to one senior official, that it wants Americans to report on other Americans, even family and friends, if they see something say something. Not reference crime, but domestic terrorism. Domestic terrorism, which they had defined, I don't know now, I've lost track. Is domestic terrorism our greatest threat to our nation, or is it climate, global warming? See, we've been getting both stories. Maybe it's domestic terrorists who believe in global warming. Maybe that doesn't work either. But the Biden administration has been pushing through the Department of Homeland Security, if you see something, say something. It was the kind of the campaign that helped stop radical Islamic terrorists. But they're really, at this point, asking anyone to turn a family or a friend or a co-worker in that you think might be getting more radicalized. And I don't know if that means politicized or radicalized that you'd actually carry out something. Some are saying that sounds more like a state secret police going through. You can make your own judgment. Obviously, if you know someone who's going to carry out a terrorist attack, and I mean an attack, or, you may decide, well, they've been holding these meetings in that guy's basement. I see a lot of people coming and going. There must be something going on. And you get down there, you might find Larry Connors, and we're just playing cards. We're playing poker. But I'm glad you came in and busted up because I was losing. Thank you very much. Save me some money. My concern is, obviously, we're going to have, for the most part, we're going to have folks reporting conservatives gathering and looking suspicious. And Lord help them if somebody pulls up and walks in the meeting and they have a pick-em-up truck outside with a rebel flag on it. So we have a balance here. We want to know about anything that might be damaging to our government. And certainly we should know about any real threat. But when Biden has described the threat from white supremacy as the most lethal threat to the homeland today, while ignoring our border, I have a hard time accepting that approach. Maybe it's just me. But we have right now across our border an porous, open border. We have people coming across on a continuous basis. We don't know who they are unless we actually catch them. We don't know where they come from, but those we have caught are clearly not just Northern Triangle. They're some from the Middle East. We don't know what they're bringing with them if we don't stop them. We know drugs are probably being smuggled in and weapons. We don't know about that either, do we? And we don't know who's buying Hunter Biden's art. Now, is there a correlation? You think? I'll let you figure it out. Next hour, the 9-year-old, did she write the speech or someone write it for it? But also Senator Rubio on his bill to investigate COVID.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.